Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
Live from the Figgis Studios, it is Weekend Geek Update. Smurf here, the purveyor of all that is geeky, nerdy, and ready to give you my take on the things that have caught my eye over the last couple of weeks, and just to inform you on just some hot topics. No, not that cheesy store that sells nothing but Pops figures and t-shirts and Harry Potter swag. No. The things that people are talking about around all of the geek sphere and what is going on. We are sponsored by Suzy Q's, who is just as much a purveyor of everything fashionable as I am geeky. She is creating some spectacular jewelry, some works that you need to buy for somebody or for yourself. Valentine's Day is still within reach, and if you're kind of scrambling on what to get the one you care about, this is what I would suggest. Go over to SuzyQs.com. Check out what she has up. I think you can still get in time for delivery, and you can give them, the one you love, something unique, something they have never seen before and will be proud to wear. So go check out SuzyQs.com. Follow her on Instagram or Facebook. And Susie's just a wonderful person. We will actually have her on coming up in a couple of episodes of the podcast. So something to look forward to. You can get a in-depth look at what a modern-day blacksmith looks like. And I've actually had requests to have Susie appear places. Somebody was inquiring the other day about, is she really a blacksmith and would she take on a tutor? Or would she be a tutor? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm not sure if she gets asked that question very often. That will be one of the questions we ask. And of course, you know, can we make me some chainmail armor? I don't know if that's fashionable. Is that in? It might be. The earth is burning. Lord knows what's going to happen next. If the undead start coming, that chainmail is going to come in handy. So, what is going on in the geek sphere? If you haven't watched our videos that we posted last week from our tour of Outworld Brewery, we did an in-depth interview with Jeremy, a sit-down spotlight with him, in addition to a magnificent tasting of some of their finer beers that they have been tenderly crafting. I mean, the care and the precision that goes into this process is tremendous. If you haven't visited their location, you probably should. In addition, watch the video on YouTube or listen to the podcast if you haven't already. Give us a like, give us a share. Please subscribe on our new YouTube channel. It's 5280 Geek, and we can use all the subscribers we can get, even a like, just even comments, things you want us to cover. Now that we have video, you will see a whole bunch of new stuff coming that I have been eagerly wanting to do, but it just doesn't come across right on a podcast. So one of which is the toy reviews, aptly named Points of Articulation. So next week we will be back in studio. Our Points of Articulation will be covering a very popular toy that kind of a retro look back and a amalgamation of different figures, comparisons of the then to the now, but it is a classic toy line. So be sure to tune in for that. And of course, our geeky cocktail, because let's face it, in this industry, you just need to either be numb or drink heavily, whichever it takes, or just laugh hard. Well, there's a bunch of things there. Speaking of which, you need to drink coffee. There we go. So what has caught my eye this week? That is an excellent question. There's a lot going on. There's a humongous amount of buzz on the comic book side as DC comes into the latter half of its future state. The Green Lantern series, of course, everyone is speculating on who, what is going to be involved in that. And of course, if you've been reading Far Sector, that might be one that you want to kind of consider. If you can find the back issues, pick up. I know they're about, it's a 12-issue run, and I think they're at issue 10 or 11 now. So it's about to cap off, but it is absolutely worth the read. It is so far removed from Green Lantern. If you're not like in the Hal or into, you know, all the other ringslingers, this is something new, something different, and very creative. I've enjoyed the hell out of it. So if you haven't picked it up, not available in trade yet, but I think you can find some of the back issues out there if you hunt. I have a feeling this will be another hot book, if hotter than it already is, especially with the rumors flying around. But hey, don't take my word for it. Go pick it up and find out for yourself. Just a hint. What else? There is, so I'll get to the big my take on this week. Of course, WandaVision. And I hinted at it last week, if you didn't catch it during the podcast with Outworld. I'm partially right, I think. My big theory that I've been sitting on and waiting to see if they were going to do it was how I think, honestly, that Scarlet Witch is going to bring mutants to the Marvelverse. And given how last week's episode ended, I believe this to be true. I'm pretty set, because there's been some definite clues, especially a couple of episodes ago when they were talking about the radiation that was emitting from the Hex area, because it's a Hex map. And I honestly, and they're saying it's the energy that was found during the Big Bang. So this is the same kind of think mutant energy that Scarlet Witch would use to bring mutants into the fold of the MCU. She did in the comic books eliminate mutants and just kind of take them out, but maybe using her to create the mutants would be kind of an interesting twist. I'm not sure if it's a good idea and how they're going to merge, you know, like X-Men First Class, or are they just going to all of a sudden just start fresh with the MCU? So there are some gray areas, but I honestly think that this is where we're going. I'm still holding true that Mephisto is involved in this, especially when you're looking at some of the imagery and elements that are going on in the background. And I think she's either, I know Scarlet Witch is for sure in control of her faculties. She knows what she's doing. However, what's kind of prompting her and motivating her really seems kind of like Mephisto somehow is playing in the background. And why I say this is because it just so feels like, as a callback to way back in the day, back in the 90s, the original Infinity Gauntlet, Thanos has it, and Mephisto is kind of whispering in Thanos's ear, kind of just giving the little nudges, some pushes, here's what I think you should do, and just constantly just there. And I think that element is playing extremely well right now in WandaVision, because as you're watching her kind of, like, she comes out of it enough to then all of a sudden, I don't want this. So I honestly think there is some other element going on in this, and I do think it's Mephisto. I could be wrong, but it's looking really heavily that way, I think. Maybe, I hope. The other element, the big reveal, and I don't even know if you can call it a big reveal, but this was, and I know it's always been kind of like tiptoeing around how they were going to get there. But Captain Rambo, of course, they introduced her during Captain Marvel. And there's always been kind of like, how are they going to do this? Because that is the second Captain Marvel. She appeared back in, I believe, it was Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 16? Yeah, like in 82. She actually is an Avenger and leads them for a while. She's gone under a couple of other names, but she was the second Captain Marvel. So and her powers were more, like, light-based. She was kind of victim of some energy explosion, and it transformed her cells, and, you know, comic book techno talk. But she ends up becoming Captain Marvel for quite a while and does a successful run through most of the 80s as Captain Marvel, part of the Avengers. And she's in this very interesting black-and-white suit, and it calls back to the 80s. It absolutely does. She's also gone on to other names after Captain Marvel, of course, since Carol Danvers and all that nonsense that it went on. But she's changed to Photon, Pulsar, and Spectrum. That's the other one. It took me a second, because that one's more recent. That one just more recently happened, and I think it was one of the newer Avenger titles back in 2013, I'll go with. Yeah, she changed it to Spectrum. I think it was like Ultimates or something. Anyway, your speculators out there, if you're interested, I honestly think there will be a run on Amazing Spider-Man Annual 16. That is Rambo's first appearance in the comics. And I do think that it's going to shoot up. I think this is how we're going to get her Captain Marvel, that somehow she gets irradiated, blown up, because she's already demonstrating kind of powers and kind of weirdness. So I do think we do get another Captain Marvel. There's no indication of what's going on with Carol yet. So maybe she'll just come in as Spectrum, her current name, just so Marvel can kind of keep the licensing on it and just kind of keep moving forward. So I think that is where it's going. So now we're basically heading into the back nine for the story. Everything is moving along quickly now, and it is. I'm very excited to see what happens next, because there's got to be some bigger reveals. There has to be, because at this point, we're in the Family Ties era, so the 80s are going strong. And I think that's how we ended up getting that special appearance at the end of last episode, is because if you notice, as we have jumped forward in time, as things have gone in there, technology or people as directly reflected in the fashion and the environment. Hence why she could take the drone in and scope things out, because there were drones in, you know, the 80s that were available. So I honestly think that's why we got that particular iteration of the character at that age, because that's what they were in the 80s. So we'll see what happens. There's a lot of other speculation out there. Of course, I think someone tossed out there how we're going to get Nicolas Cage's Ghost Rider out of this, which I just kind of laughed about, because as much as I love Nicolas Cage's Ghost Rider, I'm not Ghost Rider. I just can't. I really just think that one just needs to be scrapped and start over. I don't like the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Ghost Rider that much, to be honest with you, but I'm definitely feeling a different Ghost Rider. And I wouldn't mind getting Danny Ketch in there. Let's lay to rest. We can just come back to Johnny Blaze. Let's just keep Johnny Blaze kind of just floating out there. There's a story there. We just don't know what it is. And then we'll just bring in Danny Ketch. I always liked him better than Blaze's Ghost Rider any day of the week. Always, always. So we'll see what develops over the next couple of episodes as we're coming close to the end. I'm so excited and sad, because this has been kind of fun. It's picked up, at least the throwback to like the whole Family Ties intro just was killing me. I was like, wow. The 80s were just so cheesy and so, I wouldn't say bad, but yeah. I mean, they had Vision dressed up like Michael Gross. I was just like, no, it's not so wrong. But it was fun. We'll see what we come back as for this week. I don't know if we're into the 90s yet. So, I mean, maybe we'll get Cosby. I don't know. Cosby, I guess was more 80s. So I don't know what show. And then, of course, we'll end up with, like, you know, Family Matters, I think, will be, like, one of the final sitcom shows that we end up sitting with. And It'll be curious to see how they finish it, but I'm very anxious. But also through all of this last couple of weeks, we do get the trailer for Falcon and the Snowman, and I'm really I'm curious. I like what is already coming through as far as the trailer is concerned, in my opinion, is the chemistry between the two characters. We get a hint of it during the Winter Soldier and that whole Civil War storyline where they're sitting in the car, you know, going back and forth, and just the bantering and how much they hate each other. But at the same point, you know, there's that mutual respect and they just, you know, live to hate each other. So I'm excited to see the relationship and the chemistry expand past, you know, like a few quick moments. And what I've seen from the trailer, I believe we're going to get a huge expanse on that point and just what is going on. Now, there were some people saying that the trailer has already rewritten the ending to Infinity War. And I think what they're referencing is the shield sitting in the museum, which I don't think that's necessarily taking away from how they ended it, because yes, that, you know, Cap gave the shield to Falcon. I get that. But what's in the museum could be a prop. It could be maybe they donated the shield to the museum and later decided, okay, we need it back. It's just too valuable to have just hanging out in a museum. So, I mean, if the Flash Museum has taught us anything, is you do not leave super weapons just lying around. I think that's just a rule of thumb, okay? Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark had it right. You put it in a crate and you stick it up in the high steel. There you go. Nobody can find it. No one's going to fuck things up. But I honestly don't think that it changes anything. I just think it's an expansion on the story, and we're seeing how the fallout is. Same thing that we're seeing now with Vision and Scarlet Witch. Don't take these trailers to be gospel. And, you know, they're going to put stuff in there just to mess with the fans. Because, of course, immediately the trolls started picking it apart. And like, well, that's not right because Cap gave him the shield. Yeah, okay, whatever. Just sit back and wait for the show. Just relax. Deep breath. I am excited to see it. I've been back and forth, I know. And I'm still undecided if I'm going to like it because they're not really, I mean, I never really cared for the story too much. I mean, what Brubaker did with the Winter Soldier storyline with Cap and all of that was spectacular in the comics, and I don't know how much of that is going to come bleeding through. And to be honest with you, Falcon has never been in high regards for me as a hero. I know they've tried a lot of different takes on him in the comic and pushing him in different directions. They even tried making him a mutant or low mutant abilities because he could talk with birds or the relationship between him and his Falcon. So I know they have tried a lot of different things with the character, and none of them have really took. I do like Mackie's interpretation and his representation of the character in the series and what I've seen of that, but we'll see. And I don't know. I may enjoy it more than I'm expecting. When I definitely have been wrong before in the past. Not very often, I know. But there are times where even I miss the mark. And this could be just one of those times. This could be a huge hit from a standpoint of relying heavily on the relationship of the two characters. And I really hope so. Because I want to see these projects succeed. I want to see this grow into a bigger overall experience for Marvel. Absolutely, because if this is a success, then I may get some of my other characters that I really want to see come to fruition. So, just a thought. I'm hoping. Fingers crossed. Moving on to other stories that caught my eye, and I brought this up a couple weeks ago with Kevin Hart being signed on for the Borderlands movie. Well, now they have actually named another character that I'm surprised. The character is Tanis, an archaeologist on Pandora who might have the key to finding a vault filled with alien weapon technology, but whose complicated history with Lilith isn't going to help. The actress who is coming on to play Lilith is none other than Jamie Lee Curtis of Halloween fame, of just She's just a wonder. I mean, I just watched her. I think it wasn't that long ago, but Knives Out. I did watch it finally, and she's just spectacular. She's awesome. True Lies. I really wish they had gone somewhere with that franchise, because I really did love her mom character and just kind of coming into her own. Of course, on the other side of Schwarzenegger, I just really think that would have been a great movie series. Same thing with Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but that's a side story. They're definitely getting star power behind Borderlands. I'm no doubt about it that already Cate Blanchett, Kevin Hart, and now Jamie Lee Curtis all signed on, all with characters, all with their own sub-stories, their plots, all of it. So maybe we'll see a successful adaptation. And I know that Sonic can kind of be thrown in there as a success, or Pokemon, but these are, let's face it, kid-driven films. These are films that are a little more focused on younger audiences, and that's fine. Everything has its place. But when you're dealing with an adult adaptation, I mean, even Monster Hunters, I mean, I haven't heard any. I haven't seen it. I can't speak from experience, but the feedback and the input that I have gotten from everybody else is just, oy. So that can't be good. Yeah, that can't be good. So I don't know. I mean, I have high hopes for this. And the story that Gearbox developed for this particular series for games is very compelling to me. I love the mythos. I love the whole history and the driving force behind all of the characters and the story and what they've crafted so far. And I've loved Gearbox. I know their dedication to this franchise, to this series. I just wish that there were more games, to be honest with you. Even back in the day, I remember playing, you know, with the ex, because she loved the game and was a huge fan. And, you know, it was great. It's fun. And there is something to be said about getting all the different weapons, and I'm curious to see how they're going to capture that aspect of it. The keys and the treasure hunting, that will be easy. But the rest of the underlying stories, like the corporations that are there, the different weapons you can pick up, and just some of the quirkiness is really, I'm really drawn towards. However, I'm curious, because anytime you see anyone cosplay for Borderlands, they kind of try to recreate the different lines and the facial features of the characters, which I absolutely applaud. And that kind of dedication and all of that, I think, is tremendous. But how does that translate to film? So are they just going to dirty them up? Are they going to try and make them look cartoony? I'm curious to see what, like, the first couple of stills from the set are going to look like, as well as the costuming, because the costuming is in a league all its own. And again, I always applaud anyone that I see doing the cosplay for Borderlands. I almost said Gears of War, because Gearbox, and even Gears of War. Gears of War is another game that is just so, I see rare every once in a while people doing the cosplay for that, because it's just so intricate. But Borderlands is just, I mean, it's so tremendous, and the tasks you have to kind of get through to create that in-depth of a cosplay is always applauded. But I'm curious to see how this translates to film, because it's, again, very quirky, very interesting. Not that I don't think any of the actors at this point are bad choices. Because I huge crush and admiration for Cate Blanchett. Kevin Hart, again, like I said a couple weeks ago, absolutely, you know, adore his work. And Jamie Lee Curtis is horror royalty at this point. So, I mean, I know she's even got, I think it was in the article that I read, that she's got another Halloween film coming up out of this that we should expect to see this year. In addition to, yeah, Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends are two films that are due out in this year and next. So we'll see what happens, but I'm excited to see it. So just to keep you in the loop, that was one of the eye-catchery stories for me, and I applaud the decision. And speaking of cosplay, and probably one of the most actually joyful little movies I've watched in a while, it's now free on Amazon. Here's my take on Monster Force Zero, which was a locally shot production, and a lot of the people involved in this project are good close friends, and it was absolutely a romp to watch this film unfold and develop in front of me. And of course it's filmed at Galaxy Fest, which is now unfortunately a defunct con, but it was a few years ago. So as I'm watching this, of course, I'm totally engrossed in, like, everybody in the background and seeing people that, of course, I haven't seen since cons have been on hiatus. So it's kind of cool and refreshing. And then the story is in itself very unique. And I really liked the take and what they did with a story that I thought could go disastrously wrong. It's very fun, it's very fresh, and the chemistry between all of the characters is cool. It kind of gave me that feel of like Gauntlet. So of just, you know, four warriors thrown together, go and save the world. And it's really fun, and I can't speak highly enough of it. And of course, with it being free on Amazon right now, might as well just watch it, enjoy it as much as I did, because I think you will. It's just really, there's just some good fun in it. And it ends on a cliffhanger, and I haven't talked to any of the production team to find out if there is a sequel coming. So as soon as I get the chance to talk to anybody over in that camp, because a lot of those people that were involved with that project are also involved with the Ghostbuster fan film that I'm involved with. So it kind of goes hand in hand. We're one big happy little family, and I'm excited to see my friends again and to find out, all right, what happens? I'm invested. I want to know more. Give it to me. So, like I said, it's free on Amazon. Monster Force Zero. Please check it out. I think you'll enjoy it. What else? Oh, this was, I don't know, I guess it's kind of huge. So if you're a fan of Sandman, they did do an Audible book just last year, I think. And from everything that I have seen, that everything is coming back in, according to Amazon, it's probably one of the best-selling original-to-date audiobooks so far for Amazon. And I know they, I think, own the rights to this, as far as the audiobook is concerned. And I'm sad with that, but at the same point, cool, because they have greenlit Act 2 and Act 3. So if you haven't been listening to it, or if you always have been kind of curious about Sandman, this is probably the best way to absorb it. Now, of course, the first 20 episodes released on Audibles was the first, I think it was the first three trades, the first three graphic novels put together. So Nocturnes, The Dollhouse, or excuse me, Preludes and Nocturnes, The Dollhouse, and Dream Country. So the next two parts will be, God, that is a lot of trades for me to think about. So I'm probably not going to cover that. but part two and three will definitely, I probably encompass the next six trades, and that should put us close to just about finishing. The first series was narrated by Gaiman himself, which I kind of liked. Gaiman's voice is very, I don't know, I don't want to say sultry, but it's definitely kind of got that that tone, that, and it fits so well, because I remember on Lucifer, the TV series, I know Gaiman narrated one of the episodes, because it was like a what if or another dimension, and he was God, so he was narrating the whole story, and there's just something about the way he does this. And of course, I think Gaiman just, you know, it's his property, so he has a little bit of a joy to it, but everyone else involved in this, because James McAvoy as Morpheus and Kat Dennings as Death, is spectacular. I mean, I know Kat Dennings' voice is a little bit higher than what I kind of envisioned for Death, but it works. And then, of course, James McAvoy, who can do no wrong in my eyes. The skill level on that man is just freaking amazing. And then, of course, Taron Egerton. I think I'm saying his name right. From Kingsman, Eggy. He is Constantine. So it works really well. And, of course, Michael Sheen as Lucifer. Again, another actor that can do no wrong. In fact, he's like the whole reason I'm still watching Prodigal Son. I know I'm going to probably get shit from Red on that one, but I can't help it. Michael Sheen and it's just spectacular because I do love, and I've gone down the rabbit hole probably further than what I have on this, is Michael Sheen and David Tennant's staged. The back and forth between the two of them is just so brilliant. It is absolutely just... It is probably the best comic team duo that I have seen in ages. Like, we're talking Abbott and Costello chemistry here. Just how well they work together and perform. And it is, if you haven't watched it at all, and there's plenty of clips and stuff out there that you can find on YouTube, but it's David Tennant and Michael Sheen staged. Perfect thing to just kill hours of, if you got nothing on TV to watch right now, which it's kind of hit or miss depending upon the day. It is so worth it. As of right now, we don't have a date as far as when the next two installments, the Audibles, will be released, but I'm sure as it gets closer, they're probably still even laying down the tracks as we speak for the drama, but be sure to know that they will probably be hitting soon, at least part two. And I know that one, part two, is easy because that covers Seasons of Mist, Distant Mirrors, A Game of You, and Convergence. So those I know are pretty well set. And then the third installment, I think it's Brief Lives and World's End. I think. I don't think I'm missing any of the titles, because there are, I mean, the story is over, it's gone its course, but if you've never read it, at least pick up the first trade of Sandman. Sam Keith's artwork in that is absolutely mind-blowing. It just pulls you in, and it really does feel like a dream, especially when you get into Morpheus and what's gone on with him, and just Cain and Abel's story going back and forth. It is by far one of the most unique and intriguing series, I think, of the last decade or so. And that trade alone, if it doesn't hook you, then it's probably not for you. But if you get hooked, it really starts diving deep into the weird, the twisted, and the fun, especially when you get into Lucifer and Death, because both of those characters get introduced in this series. And I'm going to guess if you don't have those issues by now, they're probably on the rise, especially with more rumors surrounding an actual Sandman movie or show of some sort. But I'm not one to add to the rumor mill, but I would be hard pressed to believe they're not working on that now, especially after the success that we've seen with Lucifer and everybody just kind of jumping on board for that. So we will see. And the trades are easy to find. Some of the issues for Sandman, a little more difficult. So tread lightly, especially when you're trying to find a Sandman number one. That book is just ridiculously expensive. But yeah, I think it'll hold. I think it'll hold. Just a guess. All right, what else we got? Oh, this story. Now, I reported on this a while ago, just because of my fanboy kind of flared up, and I know you're supposed to take medication for that, but you know, I just couldn't because I love Buck Rogers. I grew up on it as a kid, and rightfully so. I mean, not only like the pulp magazines from like days past, and the books from 1928. I had to look. Sorry. 1928. And I just loved the whole premise of Buck Rogers. Why not? You know, guy frozen, goes forward in time. And I kind of got into it early. And then, of course, the show came out, and it was a Glenn Larson production. And, of course, all of the props and everything went to Battlestar. And, you know, they're all, you know, the same sets. It's different characters. And but what I loved about it was just, like, you know, Buck slingshotted forward in time. And it was just I loved the show. And I always wanted to see more than, you know, that one brightly lit corridor repainted, you know, four or five different colors just to make it look like you're in a different corridor. So, and then of course the second season they ended up on the ship, and then it just died, unfortunately. But that said, I reported a couple weeks ago that they were bringing this back. They're revitalizing the story, the license, and they're bringing it back to the small screen, as they should. I know there were battles and litigations over who owned it because they wanted to do a full feature. And I didn't report on that because it was just so sketchy and kind of what if, and it looked like more of a bickering contest over, you know, whose toys these were, and no one could get out of the way of the other to just make the film. And that happens. I get that, because it's your toys, and you don't want anyone else to play with them. Well, evidently, the marketing teams and licensing teams and everybody has settled. And, of course, our favorite author, Brian K. Vaughan, of Lost and, of course, of Saga fame, and Why the Last Man, which is another project that's just kind of chilling out there. Hopefully, we'll see that come finally to the small screen, because that's been a back and forth. But now Brian K. Vaughan is involved with the Buck Rogers story, which I brought up to you. The reason I'm bringing it up to you now, because now we have a name. We have someone who is not only an executive producer, but is also looking to star in this. And I guess our new Captain Buck Rogers is going to be none other than George Clooney. I really don't know how I feel about this. I mean, let's face it. It's George Clooney, and he does a great job. But is he a sci-fi guy? Is he an action hero? I mean, anytime I think of George Clooney, I mean, of course, right away you go to like ER or Facts of Life. And he does that brilliantly. The Ocean's 11 series is spectacular, and I can't see anyone else playing Sinatra's role of Danny Ocean other than George Clooney. He's got smooth down to a science, don't get me wrong. However, when you look at the action side of George Clooney, it's just not there. And I'm not even going to reference the tragedy that is Batman, okay? And even he admits that just sucked. And I don't know if, I mean, I know there are a lot of actors out there that can carry a film. And in fact, one of them is Tom Hanks. That man can absolutely carry a film, a weak one at that, and just carry forth. And if you haven't read our meat and potatoes of his more recent film for Tom Hanks, please do. Because again, the film is very, very plain, very straightforward, but what Tom Hanks delivers is absolutely incredible. So now we go to George Clooney, who I can't see as an action hero. And Batman aside, let's look at Dusk Till Dawn, which again is another kind of action, interesting story. And I just can't see him as an action hero, because even still in From Dusk Till Dawn, everything aside, because you go from one film in the first, you know, half an hour to an entirely different film for the rest of it. So, because it starts out like a basic Tarantino film, and then of course you transition into Rodriguez and everything comes off the rails. But you still have Clooney in there, who I think his best line is, psychos do not explode when sunlight hits them. I don't give a fuck how crazy they are. Great line. Absolutely delivered brilliantly. However, the rest of Clooney's performance is just, I don't know. He is just not an action. He's just not an action guy. And maybe I'm being a little over the top, and maybe I shouldn't worry about it as much. But when I think of Buck Rogers, I still think of something adventurous, something exciting, something explorative, something, you know, out of this world. George Clooney's not out of this world. Well, okay, maybe for some he is. And I know a lot of people think he's dreamy, and I get that. He's a stud. But there are just, I mean, I really believe that there is a difference between smooth and action hero. There is a fine line between it. And I just, Buck Rogers is he's dashing. He's a space pirate. I don't know how I would explain Buck Rogers, because I mean, especially when you're dealing with the era, I mean, I always kind of, you know, space cowboy, space pirate. There's definitely something dreamy about Buck Rogers. And Gil Gerard, for all of his acting weight and credit, did a incredible representation of Buck. Because it was the right blend. It was perfect. So can Clooney deliver when you compare the two actors and the style? Maybe. I don't know. I seriously don't know. And I would love some input on this, because maybe I'm missing the mark. And I can totally understand if I am. But from the standpoint of just seeing him suited up and getting out there, even I can John Crichton still, I would think first, you know, before Buck now, as far as like the adventurous type. I don't know. Get Ben Browder back. Get Ben Browder to play Buck Rogers, because that's kind of where I'm thinking. But I just can't see, because there's just something. So because let's just think about it. George Clooney holding a gun at you, a ray gun, or any kind of gun, and just has that smirk about him. You can't take him seriously. You either want to giggle or flirt with him. There's just no in between. There's nothing menacing about George Clooney. He operates on a different level than, and then maybe we'll see an entirely different Buck. It's really hard to say, especially when you're dealing with the writing prowess of Brian K. Vaughan, because he just, what he delivers and what he has done, especially with Saga. We even did a recent quarter's worth on where we at are so far with Saga. If you haven't read it, please do, because it catches you up brilliantly and gets you ready for whenever we'll see the comic book return. But I want to see this work. I really do. Don't get me wrong. I want this to be a success just as much as I want to see whatever they decide to come up with for Battlestar Galactica that's coming back. I want to see these two succeed, just because I think it's the right time, and it'll work. Well, it should work. So we'll see. But fingers crossed. And as this story develops, there's not a whole else lot on this one, but that's just my take on George Clooney becoming Buck Rogers. And like I said, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm missing the mark. Maybe there's something that you could reference for me that I can take into account. But as it sits right now, George Clooney's Buck just isn't hitting the mark for me. But I could be wrong. What do I know? What else do we got? I guess that is just about it this week. So the shorter, more compact version of Weekend Geek Update. Just my take on things that have caught my eye and some hot buttons that are just needing to be pushed. Kind of hard to resist a big red button. I don't know who said that. Somebody did. Anyway, we will be back next week, of course, with the full crew in effect, back in the studio, getting you caught up on the latest and greatest in geek news, our reviews, and booze. Wow, that just all flowed quite nicely. And coming up, we're February, so guess what's coming up? That's right, Munch Madness, the most eagerly awaited bracket of the year as cereals face off. March is right around the corner, and that means Munch Madness. Red's been working tirelessly, tirelessly? She's been working really hard putting this year's bracket together. There's some new up-and-comers in these brackets this year, and of course, will they be strong enough to usurp the king of all cereals, Cinnamon Toast Crunch? Who's to say? But that's up to you, because this relies on 100% fan interaction. It's your votes that set the champion. So we'll see if Cinnamon Toast has got the sugar. And sorry, I know, cheesy joke. What else? That's kind of about it this week. So please, any comments, questions, or things that you would be interested in hearing from us on, put in the comments below. Please like, subscribe, and share the podcast, our YouTube channel, everything else that's going on in 5280 Geek, because in the end, we're all stories, and we just want to share them. So run fast, laugh hard, and always be kind.